Welcome to the Greater Montana Foundation's first debate and discussion program with Montana primary election candidates. I'm Bill Witsit, chairman of the Greater Montana Foundation, and this program features the Republican candidates seeking their party's nomination in the June 5th primary to challenge incumbent Senator John Tester in the general election. This candidate program, and a similar one in a week with Democrats who will be seeking to challenge U.S. Representative Greg Gianforte, are viewed by the GMF trustees as important ways to help fulfill our vision and mission. That is, to benefit the people of Montana by encouraging communication with an emphasis on electronic media, on issues, trends, and values of importance to present and future generations of Montanans. It's fitting that we're coming to you from the Ed Craney Studio here in the Helena Montana Historical Society Museum. Ed Craney, whose portrait is behind me, was a pioneer Montana broadcaster. He was the founder of the Greater Montana Foundation, and he believed in broadcast excellence, of course, the state of Montana, and he believed in the values that comprise our vision and mission and still guide us today. Now, here's our moderator for this evening. It's Ron Davis, the Vice Chairman of the Greater Montana Foundation. Ron.
Thanks, Bill. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to tonight's debate. Let's meet the candidates. First, Dr. Al Olszewski. He's the oldest of seven children. Dr. Al is a third-generation Montanan and native of Great Falls. He graduated from Carroll College in Helena, where he met his wife, Nancy, and completed his medical schooling at the University of Washington. He served in the U.S. Air Force as a flight surgeon and rapid mobility trauma surgeon. For the past 20 years, Dr. Al has cared for over 100,000 patients as an independent orthopedic surgeon in Kalispell and was a recipient of the 2017 Flathead's Best Orthopedist Award. He has also served as a state representative, currently a state senator in District 6. Russ Fagg, Judge Russ Fagg, has an outstanding record of public service spanning three decades. Russ is a fourth-generation Montanan, former legislator, prosecutor, and was a district court judge in Billings for 22 years. Russ and his wife Karen have 21-year-old twins, Harrison and Barkley. Troy Downing is a U.S. Air Force combat veteran who served two tours in Afghanistan in a search and rescue squadron. He has built businesses in multiple industries with his start in high tech, merging his startup company with Yahoo in the late 90s. Welcome, Troy Downing. And finally, Matt Rosendale. State Auditor Matt Rosendale is a rancher, businessman, and former state legislator from Glendive. He is a son and brother of U.S. Marines. Matt has been married to his wife Jean for 32 years and has three sons. Matt now serves the people of Montana as our insurance commissioner and as a member of the State Land Board. Tonight, we welcome our panelists who will be asking the questions. I'd like to introduce you to Beth Sabo. Beth is a news and public affairs producer for Montana PBS. She is an Eastern Montana native, raised in Sydney and graduated top of her class from the University of Montana in Missoula with degrees in broadcast journalism and political science. Before joining Montana PBS, Beth spent 8 years with MTN News as an anchor, reporter, and producer for KBZK-TV in Bozeman. Her toughest conversations, though, are usually during negotiations with her 6 and 3-year-old children. Our other panelist tonight is Mike Dennison. Mike is the chief political reporter for the Montana Television Network, which includes 9 stations across the state of Montana. He is covering the U.S. Senate race for MTN, and has been covering Montana politics and full-time for the past 26 years, both for television and newspaper. Thank you to our panelists for joining us here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, a quick explanation about tonight's debate. The candidates will be asked a direct question from our panelists. The panelists will address the candidate, ask them a question. They'll have 60 seconds in which to respond. If the questioner does not feel they answered the question the way they thought it should be answered, they can press for another 30 seconds. After that, the remaining candidates will all receive 30 seconds to rebut or give their response to the same question. To get us started this evening, Beth Sable will start with our first question tonight, as she will ask her first question of Al Olszewski.
Thanks, Ron. Mr. Olszewski, you've said you wanted to abolish Obamacare and restrict Medicaid, which is now covering one-fourth of Montanans. How specifically would you cut back on Medicaid spending, and who would no longer get coverage?
Thank you. You know, what I want to do is refocus Medicaid. I want to bring Medicaid back to where it traditionally is supposed to be, as a safety net for the most vulnerable people, our elderly, our most young, our developmentally disabled. We are seeing it right now in our state that they are the ones that the system is now collapsing for. Why? Because we've taken the money that should be going to pay for their health care and have used it to finance Medicaid expansion in the state for 96,000 people that are the working poor and the middle class. They need to be in a different system, not in our Medicaid system.
A follow-up, please. What other system would you put them in?
Well, what we can do is that we know that already we have an insurance exchange system. And did you know that if you're 100% of the poverty level, that in 2015, when we were doing the legislation, it would cost a single able-bodied adult only $18 a month, and they would have a $500 deductible for that health care insurance. I mean, that's an outstanding health care system that's already there and it's present. Let's put them in it.
Mr. Fagg.
Beth, the Affordable Care Act is anything but affordable. It has been a disaster for hardworking Montanans from one end of the state to the other. I absolutely agree that we should appeal it. And regarding your Medicaid question, it's very clear. We have able-bodied, non-dependent males and females on Medicaid who are able to have a job. They should not be on Medicaid. That's a clear place where we should cut.
Mr. Downing, your response.
I think one of the interesting things that we keep talking about in this nation and this whole debate about medical care in general is we're talking about ensuring broken systems, and we're not talking about actually fixing the systems. We're not looking at why it's so expensive. Why are we spending so much money on our medical care, more than any other developed nation? Let's look at hospital billing practices, reestablishing doctor-patient relationships, tort reform. Let's look at the things that make it expensive, then talk about insurance.
Thank you, Mr. Downing. Mr. Rosendale.
We focus far too much attention on making sure people have insurance instead of making sure that they have access to good health care. While serving as the insurance commissioner, I've expanded health care savings accounts. We have expanded into health care sharing ministries. We've opened up the primary care provider agreements. And now that the president has extended short-term policies, we're going to see those being offered in 2019. There's going to be a vast array of opportunities for people to actually access health care in an affordable manner.
Mr. Fagg, welcome.
Thank you, Mike.
You've made cutting into the federal deficit a kind of a priority of your campaign.
Yes, sir.
And I think most people hear that and think, well, you've got to cut spending somewhere, so where are you going to cut it?
So I have a very specific plan. Let's take the 2018 budget and then just cap it for the 2019 budget. I believe that will work. That and 3 to 3.5% growth, and we'll have a balanced budget, which is now over $21 trillion in about 3 to 3.5 years. At the current rate, the problem is our children and grandchildren are being saddled with this debt. That is just unsustainable, and it's completely wrong. It's un-American. Actually, we're going to be the first generation to pass off a bigger mess to our kids than we inherited. That is just wrong. And so capping spending and growing the economy, we will have a balanced budget at a 3 to 3.5% growth rate in about 3 years. I think that's very doable.
So you're willing to cap programs like Social Security and Medicare, which may take some statutory changes. You're willing to cap those as well?
You know, I think everybody has to pull on their belt, and I think Americans are resilient. If everybody believes that everybody is pulling in their belt, they are willing to do that. It's so important that we balance our budget that I think Americans would be willing to do that. So yes, that would be across the board. And you know, we all know there's a lot of waste in government. There's a lot of fraud in government. And we know we can do better with what's out there. And we as Americans need to get there.
Mr. Downing.
You know, we have a tremendous spending problem. And, you know, I'm a combat vet and I'm a businessman, and so I come from this looking at it in a different way. Having been in the private sector and then gone into a government program, I was shocked when I first went into the military how inefficient the administration was, how much more it took to actually run it. The fact that we had fiscal years where you tried to empty your bank account rather than save. I think that we can cut costs on virtually any government program, and I think we need to start doing that.
Mr. Rosendale.
While I was in the legislature, I brought amendments to the budget every time that I served in finance and claims. Some of those were passed, some of those were not passed. We have to be able to take those strong, difficult votes and begin to reduce spending. While I've been in the auditor's office, I reduced my operating costs by 23%. I reduced my staffing by 6%. And these are major, major cuts. I was the only elected state official to decline my own pay raise. And those are the kind of steps that you need to take in the federal government to reduce spending.
Mr. Olszewski.
You know, we can look at an example. If we do it tactically, every agency has an operations and maintenance budget, and they are using that to maintain a significant amount of infrastructure. And quite honestly, all of our agencies have far too much infrastructure and real estate. And a classic is the military. Our military leaders have told us that they believe that we have 20% excess infrastructure and real estate. And what we need to do is we need to modify that and sell it and use that money to fund our services.
Mr. Downing, questions have been raised about your Montana residency, such as in the FWP hunting license citations from last year. Aren't those questions going to be difficult to overcome in a general election?
No, I don't think so. I first came to Montana almost 20 years ago and fell in love with it. And I was wrapping up a career in technology, and then September 11th came. And I was drawn away as I stood up and enlisted in a combat search and rescue squadron. And then I did my career as I was building some other businesses in the National Guard. And then after I was honorably discharged, that's when I transferred to be full-time in Montana. And really, the thing about what makes a Montanan, you know, that's one of the interesting things that keeps coming up. I look at somebody like John Tester, who, you know, his great-grandmother was born here. And is he voting Montana values? No, he's not. He's voted for Obamacare. He's voted against tax reform. He voted against Neil Gorsuch. He has been anti-Montana his entire career. So really, what makes you Montana? What makes you Montana is what you care about, the people who think the same, the communities that you want to support. And I think that we'll get past that.
Mr. Downing, can you explain the records that have surfaced that list you as a registered agent on a vineyard in California, where doing so means that you have to be a resident of that state?
Yes, I've got businesses all over the country. I've got a vineyard in California. I've done business in Texas, in Louisiana, in Nevada, all over the place. A registered agent is a process service. I have a paralegal that sits in an office where that address is. That's totally normal business. I had another one in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I've actually never stepped in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. That is not an unusual thing to have process services in different places.
Mr. Rosendale, would you like to respond?
Sure. I'll probably take a couple of hits on not being born here either. And I'll tell you, there's only one person I know in this world that was able to select where he was born, and that was 2,000 years ago in Bethlehem. The rest of us, we just get to pick where we're going to live. I have created businesses here in Montana and back in Maryland when I was there. I have hauled sugar beets. I have helped work cows in the fall, and I've driven steel posts into parched earth to help my neighbors rebuild fences after they lost everything in a prairie fire.
Thank you, Mr. Rosendale. Mr. Olszewski.
You know, Mr. Downey is innocent until proven guilty. He will have, he has his ability to have due process, and he will be in, have his day in court. And, you know, until then, he's innocent until proven guilty.
Thank you.
So I think the other issue regarding that is apparently yesterday we learned that Matt signed in 2015 some tax records under penalty of perjury that he was a Maryland resident. And, you know, if that was a mistake, then Matt, let's talk about it. Why do you sign something or that's blank? I just don't see how that could happen. On the other hand, that generation or that issue just goes away from me. I'm a fourth generation Montanan. I want to have a fifth and sixth generation with my kids and grandkids here, and that's why I'm running for the U.S. Senate. I want them to have the opportunities that I've had, and that's why I'm running.
Mr. Rosendale, welcome.
Hey, Mike.
I was going to ask you a different question, but now that we've had kind of this talk about the document in Maryland, I think you should have a chance to answer that. Of course, you talked about your residency, and you're going to question about that, too. I'm just wondering if you'd like to answer Mr. Fagg, and also, how do you plan to kind of get Montanans to warm up to your persona, given that you have been here, well, perhaps less than your whole life?
Yeah. First, I will address that. I appreciate it. You know, I had property back in Maryland, and my brother was my neighbor, and my mom was my neighbor on the other side at this particular property. And so I sold all the rest of my holdings back in Maryland back 10, 15 years ago. This was the one piece that remained, and I didn't sell it as long as they were there. My brother was diagnosed and passed away with cancer back in 2014 in April. And that August, my mother's health declined to the point that she had to go into assisted living. At that point, they were gone, so I felt that it was okay for me to go ahead and sell that property. The transaction was handled by a title company, and they screwed up the documents. They altered the documents without my consent or knowledge, and they have sent since an apology letter to me, which was clearly stated in the newspaper publication. And so I really don't know what the story is.
Mr. Olszewski?
You know, we're all Montanans. And, you know, I love how John Steinbeck said that, you know, he had admiration for other states, but this state he loved. You know, my grandparents came here and homesteaded Blaine County and Judith Basin County. And their neighbors, who had been there a generation before, you know, helped them and brought them and helped them to survive the cold winters. You know, we're all Montanans here.
Thank you. Mr. Fagg.
Well, I agree. You know, Troy is innocent until proven guilty. And I totally agree with that. As an officer of the court and a judge for 22 years, I believe that fundamentally. And so that issue will play out. This issue, though, from Maryland, I think is a different situation. I mean, I've seen it. An inch away from his signature, it shows that he's a Maryland resident, and that's what he's asking for a tax exemption. I think it's a big issue. Matt moved here 15 years ago, so let's get to the bottom of that issue.
Yeah, I just want to say something. I've lived in a lot of places, and this is home. I found Montana. This is home. This is where I spend my time. This is where I volunteer for foundations, where I help mentor young professionals in Big Sky and Bozeman, where I help veterans. I'm a life member of the Montana VFW. I'm very connected with my community, with the veteran community, with the people, with the students, with the children of my community. And that is my home. That's where my heart is. And I just want to make that clear.
Mr. Olszewski, you've had a campaign, I think it's kind of had a lower profile than a lot of your competitors here, and you certainly had less campaign money. How can you realistically hope to pull this off, to win this?
Well, I believe that that Representative David Bratt had a lot less money than Eric Cantor in the primary for the House of Representatives in Virginia. If I recall, he spent less than $200,000 and still had money in the bank, and he was outspent 6-1 by Eric Cantor, who has happened to be the majority leader, yet he lost. You know, this race isn't about endorsements. It's not about money. It's about the message. And I believe I'm the one up here that has the best message.
Mr. Fagg.
So, you know, I am so grateful. I have picked up over 1,000 donations from Montanans. I am a fourth generation, and I picked up the endorsements of Governor Mark Roscoe, the late Governor Judy Martz, Governor Stan Stevens, Congressman Rick Hill, Congressman Denny Reberg, Phyllis Burns, wife of our beloved Conrad. Over 70 people that have served in the Montana legislature endorsing me. I am so grateful. As I'm grateful as I am, I'm asking all the people that are listening or watching, I'm here to earn your support. In fact, I think I've actually picked up more Montana contributions than all of my primary opponents combined.
Mr. Downing.
You know, I think often about service before self, and I look at what a candidate has done and how have they served and what they have done. And I think that really what makes the campaign is looking back at the track record. What has that person done with their life? What are their skills? How can they solve problems? What have they proven throughout their life? Have they built businesses? Because I have. Have they made payrolls? I have. Have they signed at the dotted line and gone to war for this country? I have. I think the messaging should come up in anything. Who you are, what you've done, what your skills are.
Mr. Rosendale.
You know, the people of Montana sent me to Helena to reduce spending, and I did. And they sent me to Helena to reduce regulations, and I did. And they sent me there to protect their property rights and their gun rights and the sanctity of life, and I did that as well. And because of that, I've earned the support and endorsement of legislators across the entire state. But not only that, I've got county chairs covering all 56 counties, constituency groups lined up ready to knock on doors and make telephone calls, and endorsements from Senators Cruz, Lee, and Rand Paul. That's what's going to help.
All right, Mr. Fagg, what steps specifically are you supporting that would create more middle-class jobs in Montana and the nation? And we're talking about jobs that pay a good living wage with good benefits.
Specifically, I'm a proponent of limited government, individual responsibility, the rule of law, private property rights, and incentive-based systems such as capitalism. Those principles will build jobs. It's not government's responsibility to grow jobs. It's the people out there and the incentive-based system that will bring those jobs. Furthermore, if I'm elected, I will put a modernization to the Endangered Species Act and to the Equal Access to Justice Acts. Those are causing crippling problems across our state in the natural resource industry. The forests, the minerals, the coal, and those are good paying opportunities for good paying jobs. I'm also a supporter of the internet. I think we can have a lot of distance businesses operating out of Montana. So those are specific things I'll do to make sure that we have economic prosperity and the American dream for the next generation. In fact, that's why I'm running, because I am concerned about losing the American dream for my kids and your grandkids.
Can you expound on what policy changes you would make to the Endangered Species Act?
Absolutely. Over in Sydney, they have the WEIR system, and that's being challenged by the radical environmentalists. They want them to do away with that WEIR. That's absolutely preposterous. That is the foundation of the irrigation system over there. It would be crippling to eastern Montana if we lost that. So we need to protect species, but remember that the human species is the most important species to protect. We need to bring balance to that system.
Mr. Downing.
Well, first of all, I'm the only one up here that's actually created jobs. You know, I've created jobs, management jobs across the country, technology jobs. I'm the only one that's created jobs like that, and I think about that a lot. First thing is get government out of the way. Allow businesses to thrive and start allowing people to create small business. That creates jobs. I think that we've got opportunity for technology here. And just to piggyback on the Endangered Species Act, you know, that is what you get when you send career politicians to D.C. making policy for us. Let's stop doing that. Let's do something different.
Mr. Rosendale.
When I was 25 years old, if you had a $100 bill and a good idea and a strong work ethic, you could start a company. And now that $100 bill would not pay for your license fee. That is all about regulations, and society is not better off because of them. We've gone through the auditor's office and started reviewing policies and rules and have already had several meetings to reduce those and bring those out of the books, simply because of identifying rules that were there simply to create paperwork that sits on a shelf that no one even reviews.
Mr. Olszewski?
You know, as your next United States Senator, I'm going to do two things. One is I'm going to continue to work hard with reducing all the regulations that are burdening us as businesses. As a businessman who grew a business from 14 employees to 85 employees, I will tell you that right now what was killing my business was the regulations. Number two, I would also be one of the people telling the story of the Trump tax cuts, because what it does is allows 100% depreciation, and we need to tell all the business people about that. And when they hire more or buy more equipment, they need more people to run it.
Mr. Downing, good evening.
Evening.
You're bringing Michael Flynn into campaign for you. Of course, as you know, he was forced to resign his position as National Security Advisor and pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. Why do you see him as a positive for your campaign?
I see Michael Flynn as a patriot. This is a man who served this nation for 33 years, 5 years as a combat veteran. I think that he's been a casualty of what's going on in D.C., and we need to stand up for our own, and we need to fight back. Details of what happened there, I don't have all the details, but I see him as a patriot. I see him as a fellow combat veteran. I got to say, I was flattered when he called me and said, hey, you're going to win this primary. I think you can beat Tester. How can I help you? And I said, I would love to have you come out to Montana. And obviously, that's resonated with a lot of Montanans. I'm seeing that across the state of people exciting to meet this American patriot. In terms of the negatives, I don't see that being a problem. I see that he has done amazing things for this nation. He's obviously been through a lot, and he's going to continue serving this nation. And I'm proud to have him here by my side campaigning with me.
Mr. Rosendale.
It is going to be critically important to have support at the national level to win this race. John Tester has raised over $11 million, and while it would be great to think that we can do that right here within Montana, we have 1 million people. So I am thrilled that I am able to get to not only have my infrastructure in place across the state, but I do have the endorsements and the support of Senators Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul and the current National Security Advisor to President Trump, John Bolton. And I expect that they will be by my side helping me through this every step of the way.
Thank you, Mr. Rosendale. Mr. Olszewski.
You know, General Flynn is a patriot. He's somebody who's pleaded guilty to an infraction with the FBI. I'd like to know more details before I could say whether it's an asset or a detriment to the campaign for him to be involved here in Montana. He's a good man.
Mr. Fagg.
So I'm just so grateful for the Montana endorsements I have received, the three former Republican governors, two former Republican congressmen, over 70 people that have served in the Montana legislature, and most importantly, over 1,000 Montanans that have supported me. You know, out-of-state endorsements are troubling to me, especially one as radical as Steve Bannon, who supports Matt. I mean, this is a person who President Trump said has lost his mind. He called President Bush the most disastrous president the United States has ever had, and this is on the heels of President Trump. And yet Steve Bannon is all in for Matt. That even troubles me more than Michael Flynn.
Mr. Rosendale, I was going to ask you something else, but since you brought it up, you mentioned the importance of having national backing. You are garnering support from national conservative groups, super PACs like Citizens United, and other high-profile individuals. In 2015, you voted against a bipartisan bill to crack down on dark money campaign spending in Montana. What sorts of reporting requirements do you support for money spent on political activity?
I think that money that the candidates receive should be disclosed as soon as possible, instead of having this extensive waiting period before they have a reporting. Actually, there's the ability right now for people to collect money as a candidate and basically keep it in the shadows, if you will, until 3 months, 4 months after they've actually received it, which puts us in a position where we don't know where those funds are coming from. I think the disclosure for the funds that a candidate receives should be done as soon as possible. What outside groups do, I think it's going to be very difficult to go in and try to regulate that because you have different organizations that have to have the ability to support their organization and to promote things that help them and to oppose things that are going to hurt that organization freely, or else you're basically suppressing free speech.
A lot of your financial backing is coming from very conservative national groups. Should voters be worried that you're going to put a conservative agenda above the interests of Montanans?
Oh, no. I think that my agenda has been very clearly defined over the last 6 or 7 years that I've served the people of Montana in the legislature and as the state auditor very effectively. If you see, I've brought together some very diverse groups to draft and pass pipeline safety legislation after we had the two pipeline breaks on the Yellowstone River. I was able to bring together very diverse groups to pass property land management legislation and likewise.
Mr. Olszewski.
You know, I think the biggest mistake that we've made in our political system is to allow the creation of PACs and super PACs. You know, I believe that in our system, you should be able to use your voice, and we have time, talents, and treasure. For some of us, we can pound and walk doors, and we can carry signs. Other people can do things with their talents with social media, and other people use money. And I think they just can use what they want, their talents, but also put their name to it.
Mr. Fagg.
So I'm also concerned about dark money. It doesn't seem to be the American way. I also understand there are free speech issues that are inherent in this, and those have to be balanced. I guess I'm even more concerned about the outside pressure that makes people change their opinion on issues. And I'm curious why 4 years ago when Matt ran for Congress, he supported transferring public lands and talked about it was a constitutional prerogative. And now 4 years later, he's completely changed his mind 180 degrees, and I know the Constitution hasn't changed.
Mr. Downing?
Yeah, I worry also about the constitutional implications, but it is disturbing when you've got a lot of money that is coming from outside that is doing advertising and the bidding of a candidate, and you're wondering, you know, what's behind that. And one of the issues that I've seen is there was a PAC supporting Mr. Rosendale that put some ads there implying that he had support of people who called Mr. Rosendale's campaign to have him taken down, and they said, talk to the PAC. And they're livid and have no idea what to do to get off of those ads that these PACs are putting on TV in Montana.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to and viewing the debate between Montana's Republican Senate candidates live from the Ed Craney Studio at the Montana Historical Society Museum in Helena. Our debate will continue after this timeout. And welcome back to the Ed Craney Studio here at the Montana Historical Society Museum in Helena for the Greater Montana Foundation debate between our Republican candidates for U.S. Senate. We continue the debate with a question from Beth Sable.
Thanks, Ron. Mr. Olszewski, do you support the transfer of management of federal lands to the states in any way, and how so?
You know, I would support the management or transfer the management of our federal lands to our state. What we know is that here in our state, we should be very proud. Our state agencies are making a profit on state lands, on an average about $3 an acre. Or excuse me, I think it's $9 an acre. And when we look at the federal lands in Montana, the federal government's losing approximately about $3 per acre. So, yeah, I'm very proud of our agencies, and I would love to see them manage federal lands in Montana and do it better than what we would see from the federal government.
Mr. Fagg, your response, please.
So I mentioned this earlier. I absolutely am opposed to the transfer of federal lands. I believe there needs to be more state management of federal lands, absolutely, because local control is always good. I'm a local control guy. And yet we have an article from April 19th, 2014, by Charles Johnson. Rosendale calls for transferring federal lands to state. That was 2014. And now all of a sudden he's changed his mind, and I guess the question is why?
Mr. Downing.
Well, I think in all things government, the bigger and farther away you get, the worse it is. And I don't think it's reasonable to transfer ownership. I don't think that's a fight that can be won. But I think we need to have a seat at the table. And the problem is there's too many making decisions on what we do here that are too far away. And I think that we need to have a seat at the table. We need to say what we're going to do in our own backyard, what's working, what's not working. And I think that having a large federal government having the entire say for what we do in our backyard is like us telling New Yorkers what to do with their subway system.
Mr. Rosendale.
You know, the Enabling Act that Montana entered into with the federal government granted them the federal government the ability to act as a fiduciary and manage those properties until they were turned over to statehood. As I traveled around the state, the people of Montana do not want the federal lands transferred, and I discovered that 3 years ago. And so since then, I've demonstrated with my work on the land board that we know how to manage those lands properly. We've opened access to 45,000 acres of additional ground, 16 miles.
Thank you, Mr. Rosendale.
Mr. Fagg, you, like all the candidates, have said you're pro-life.
Right.
Does that mean you think abortion should be illegal in all circumstances? Could you perhaps more clearly define or more precisely define your position there?
Well, let me talk about my background. Karen and I have been married for 26 years, and we are super blessed to have twins who are now 21 years old. I had a life-changing moment when they were 6 weeks in utero, and we had an ultrasound. And very clearly, we saw two beating hearts, just as clear as can be. And even to this day, it sends a shiver down my back. It was a life-changing moment for me. And so I knew at that point I needed to be pro-life. And so I got involved. I was on the LaVie Crisis Pregnancy for over a decade. I ended up being the chairman of that Crisis Pregnancy Center. And so I am unabashedly pro-life, and I will tell you that one tragedy does not beget another tragedy. Perhaps in the life of a mother there should be an exception, but that would really be about the only exception that I would see.
And does that mean that you would favor overturning Roe v. Wade?
Yes. It's a decision that I think was made by five unelected justices. I believe that's a state's rights decision, and every state should have the right to make that decision for themselves. As you know, that's precedent, and it's going to be up to the United States Supreme Court to overturn that. As a judge, I understand that probably any better than anybody up here. But yes, I would support overturning Roe versus Wade and giving it back to the states for the states to decide for themselves this very personal and emotional question.
Mr. Downing.
This one's very personal for me. I was the result of a teenage pregnancy. And 51 years later, I think back at that, and I think of my mom's decision to allow me to be here. I thank God for that every day. I think that there was a plan for me. I am so grateful that I'm here. And it's a very personal thing for me, because just like I was given the chance, the choice to be here, I would never stand in the way from anybody else's choice to exist. I think that that's a horrible place to be.
Mr. Rosendale.
I think that we absolutely have to protect all life. We have to place a high value on life, and whether we're talking about the unborn, the infirmed, or the elderly, once we start declaring one life not worth being around, then it puts us on a slippery slope. And I have been very, very outspoken about my support for life for many, many years, and have gone out and done public speaking and supported legislation to do the same. Thank you.
Mr. Olszewski.
You know, I believe in the sanctity and dignity of all human life from conception till natural death. And I do believe that abortion should be illegal. I do also believe in the doctrine of self-defense. And if a woman has a crisis pregnancy and her life is physically in danger, she needs to be able to protect herself. And in that situation, I believe an abortion would be her right.
All right. Mr. Downing. You've emphasized your combat experience in Afghanistan and the Middle East. What should be our overarching policy goals in the Middle East, and how involved or not involved should the U.S. be in places like Syria?
Right. I think, first of all, as a combat veteran, I think it's important that we understand. I hear all these questions about military spending, but we need to make sure that we have the strongest military out there. We have peace by having a strong military, making sure we protect our fighting forces out there. I get asked a lot about having forces out there, what's working, what's not. And I don't think we need to have, you know, tremendous forces out there, but we need to be able to react. And when somebody asks me, how long do we need to be there? I mean, you know, there's not something happening right now. You know, my question is usually, how long do you want that fire station down the street? You know, your house may not be on fire, but you need a presence. I think we need to be able to protect our interests, our allies abroad. And so I think we need to continue a presence out there. In terms of the question about Syria, you know, we made decisive action about people gassing their own people. Are we really humans if we don't have a response to that? I think there's no reason for us to get involved in a civil war, but I think we do need to react quickly to the human part of that.
Thank you, Mr. Downing. Mr. Rosendale.
I think the first thing we have to recognize is the reason that these things are taking place around the nation right now is because we've had weak leadership in the past administration and bad votes from John Tester. He voted for an Iran deal. He voted to eliminate or certainly supported President Obama's decision to eliminate a missile defense system over in Eastern Europe. And when we start taking these types of actions, what it does is undermines the people around the nation, their confidence in the United States.
Mr. Olszewski.
We should not be in Syria. We are not the world's policemen. And at this point, I think we should stay out of it.
Mr. Fagg?
So our national defense is to protect our country, and I agree with my friend Dow that we should not be the world's policeman. My look at this is I would not enter into any engagement that I was not willing to send my own children there. I think we've gone too far in too many places. I do support the Syria strikes. I think they were carried out by Great Britain, France, and the United States. They were targeted and they were effective, so I do support that, but we didn't have any boots on the ground, and I think we took out a serious weapon in that chemical weapons that it was being used against Syria's own people.
Mr. Rosendale, today you along with some of the other candidates have taken Mr. Tester to task for his actions involving the VA secretary nominee, Mr. Jackson. And so are you saying that Senator Tester and also senators from the other side of the aisle to just ignore these allegations raised by multiple sources and just confirm Mr. Jackson? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is that John Tester very conveniently brought information up against a man who was getting ready to be considered as Secretary of the VA when that information seems like it was available for quite some time. So when we have Ronnie Jackson, who has served three previous administrations and no one has raised a concern, it seems to me he has at least earned the right to have a hearing so that we can find out if these accusations are actually real or not.
Well, but the accusations were brought to the committee by whomever, and it wasn't just Senator Tester, it was also Republican members of the committee as well who expressed some concerns and wanted to delay the hearing.
It is my understanding that the information was brought forward and it had not been verified or sourced, and so that is why it couldn't be verified. That is my understanding.
Mr. Olszewski.
You know, it's a process. And so what we have is we have our own senator from Montana who bullied a fine man to the point where he decided to pull himself out of the confirmation hearings. In the process, this information should have been brought and into the confirmation hearings, and it should have been there, not in the public court, not in the media. This was wrong.
Mr. Fagg.
So as a judge, I understand how important due process is, which is basically fair process. And I'm going to say no to politics and yes to a fair process. And that's my concern. It looks like Senator Tester has prejudged this man and besmirched his character and his integrity, calling him names such as the Candyman. My solution is, Senator Tester, have him in your confirmation hearings, ask him all those tough questions, see how he answers, and then vote him up or down. But don't prejudge him. That's my concern with Senator Tester's actions.
Mr. Downing.
Mike, one of the things that you mentioned there is whomever. I think that's a big problem. Stand up and be counted. If we can just take unsubstantiated claims and destroy something, I mean, who really are we? Stand up and be counted. If there are real accusations made by real people who will stand up and be counted, yes, absolutely. That deserves some questioning. That deserves the time of day. Let's talk about it. But people who are just not anonymous people making accusations that can take somebody down like this, that's just not the America that I want.
Mr. Olszewski, the problem with healthcare in America, as you've talked about and other candidates have talked about, is that it's unaffordable for many. One emergency can bankrupt a family. Should the federal government be doing anything to reduce healthcare costs? If so, what?
You know, I don't think I've seen anything that the federal government has done to decrease costs in anything that they've tried. In fact, if any process that they've entered into in the free market, they've screwed it up. I mean, it's plain and simple. I mean, whether it's price controls, whether it's trying to pick winners or losers, what happens is Americans lose in this situation. So what I would like to see is for them to back off on the regulations. And as a physician, give me a chance to put up my prices and let me compete against the hospitals and employed physicians in an even market. But right now, they've created winners and losers. They allow employed physicians to be paid more. What they're doing is they're running the free market out. That's wrong.
Mr. Fagg?
So I believe in choice and competition. I think that's the key to solving this system. I like health savings accounts. I like patients having skin in the game. I like people being able to ask for insurance across state lines, so I agree with competition across state lines. I think if we move it to a market-driven system, we can solve this system, which will actually be affordable, something that is affordable for hardworking Montanans. The system that we currently have is unsustainable and absolutely needs to be replaced.
Mr. Downey.
We have to ask ourselves why health care is so expensive in this country, and we need to start having serious conversations on those things. And these are all conversations we need to explore, and I think I mentioned it earlier. You know, as a businessman and a problem solver, I think about how to get those costs down. How can we start making sense out of hospital billing practices? We need to start looking at tort reform. Sometimes bad things happen to good people, and nobody's at fault, but somebody's going to get sued, and we're all going to pay for it. Let's look at pharmaceutical costs. Let's look at reestablishing a doctor-patient relationship. Let's look at the costs.
Mr. Rosendale.
I met with Rand Paul 3 weeks ago, and we talked about a budget amendment bill that he's going to bring forward, and we're going to, he's going to insert language in there to expand dramatically health savings accounts. And health savings accounts are one of the things you can do at the federal level. They need to take the caps off of there and allow those funds to be utilized for procedures, for premiums, and for pharmaceuticals.
Mr. Fagg, you've said the number one problem facing America is the national debt and have pledged to reduce it.
Yes.
Last month, President Trump signed a $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill to avert a government shutdown, but it further increases the ever-growing national debt. How would you have voted on this measure and why?
I would have voted against the omnibus bill. It was a, it took the sequestration, it lifted the sequestration caps. I think that was absolutely wrong. That was something that Congress had done that showed some real fortitude to try to address the national deficit. And to me, you cannot be a great country. In fact, Dwight Eisenhower once said, we can't be a great country if we go broke. We can't be a strong country if we go broke. And that's, I'm afraid, where we're headed. We're going to implode from within if we don't get a handle on this deficit. I applaud Congressman Gianforte and Senator Daines for voting against it. I would have voted against it. It was a budget buster. It was unreasonable. It was just unconscionable that we would continue to pass on more debt to the next generation. And I think it was very bad policy. I would have voted against it.
Mr. Downing?
You know, as somebody who has built businesses and managed businesses, again, I look at this as a business problem. And number one, you put 2,200 pages on my desk and ask me to sign it the next day. That's just bad business. That's what happens when you send career politicians to solve problems in D.C. The second part is if you can't pay your debt, the first thing you do is stop the leaking. You don't put more debt on there. $1.3 trillion onto the $21 trillion out there. First, stop the leaking. You can't keep adding to that. It's already an unfixable problem. How do we stop it? Let's stop the leaking.
Mr. Rosendale.
No, I would not have voted for the omnibus bill. The tax reform legislation that went through generated, it's expected to generate records amount of revenue for our nation, $3.4 trillion. The problem is that we're going to spend records amounts of revenue, $4.2 trillion. We're looking at about an $800 billion deficit right now. You have to reduce spending. I've demonstrated the ability to do so. I reduced my operating costs by 23%. I reduced my staffing by 6%, and I declined my own pay raise.
Mr. Olszewski.
No, I would not have signed for this omnibus bill. In fact, I'm still angry about it. I mean, I'm a person that, again, 100% in support of the Trump tax cuts. You just don't turn around and then create the largest pork barrel legislation we've ever seen and then get it through and pass it through in the dark of night before. And again, something that we don't even know what was in it, and you're asking our senators to vote for it. What happens, we need to put the Senate in regular order, we have to get rid of Mitch McConnell, and we need to get back where the House, who sent us a budget in September, we need to pass it through regular order.
Mr. Downing, Montana's farmers and ranchers stand to lose. They have a 25% tariff on wheat and beef. It's put into place by China. I'm wondering if you agree with President Trump's approach to what he says are unfair trade practices in China. And also, I'm wondering if you support the president's increased tariffs on steel and aluminum.
Yes, thank you. As the only one up here who is actually has a business that does international trade, I think about tariffs a lot. I actually have a company that manufactures in the United States, and we export across the world. And I think about that. And nobody wants to get into a trade war. Obviously, that ends up not being good for anybody. But President Trump's a deal maker. We haven't seen the final deal. Yes, I'm very concerned about creating upward expenses or you know, you call it a tax for our producers. Obviously, agriculture is a big issue in Montana. We need to support that. We need to make sure that they can thrive. In terms of the steel and aluminum tariffs, you know, yes, that's going to create some short-term upward pressure in jobs and economy, longer-term upward pressure in consumer prices. But the thing that nobody's talking about, and this goes back to the rancher part as well, is national security. And as a combat veteran, I think about national security all the time. And if we can't produce in this nation steel and aluminum to supply, build airplanes and boats and everything else, and we can't produce food, national security issue.
So are you saying that you support the tariffs?
Yeah,
that Mr. Trump has imposed on steel and aluminum?
You know, at this point, yes, I do. We haven't seen the final deal. And we'll see where those where that all levels. I don't think we have a final deal from the president. If there's how it gets negotiated, who gets excluded, who is part of it, I think that's important. And to just say, yes or no right off the bat on a 25% across, I don't think that's politics as usual. We need to see where this finally ends up, and we need to make sure that we do have fair trade with everybody.
Mr. Rosendale.
What I support is the negotiation process that I think President Trump is an expert at. I myself have negotiated contracts, many, many thousands of them over the years. And what he's doing is showing that when you begin from a point of strength, that you get a better deal. Who 6 months ago would have thought that we were going to have North Korea sitting at the table looking at dismantling their nuclear program? President Trump already had the NAFTA agreement worked on to the point that has helped our sugar producers here in Montana. And I think he's going to be able to do the same thing with the other industries.
Mr. Olszewski.
You know, I support the president in negotiating for the entire United States. You know, as Americans, he should negotiate not only for metals, but he should also negotiate for us here with agriculture and ranching. The fact is that tariffs are a tool that he needs to have on the table when he goes into negotiations. You know, we need to all be concerned. We all need to pay attention. But united we stand, divided we fall. We should not bicker behind on these issues behind our president.
Mr. Fagg.
Agriculture is the heartbeat of Montana. 80% of Montana agricultural products get exported out of the state, and 50% get exported out of the country. As Gordon Stoner said in an excellent article in the paper either yesterday or today, calling out Matt for his support of the tariffs, this is going to decimate Montana industry, which is the heartbeat of our country. No, I don't support the tariffs. I think my job is to represent Montanans first. My slogan says, jobs first, Montana always. This is bad for Montanans, and I would not support those tariffs.
All right, Mr. Rosendale.
Yes.
I am going to return to the news of the day.
Okay.
a follow-up, a point of clarification. We talked earlier about the attacks on Senator Tester and his handling of the nominee, Ronny Jackson. Point of clarification, the allegations that were brought forward by veterans. So, you've long said that you are a constitutional conservative. Is it not the job of a U.S. senator to counter the executive branch to prevent tyranny?
Absolutely. Absolutely it is.
Is it not the job of a U.S. senator to fully vet and advise and consent all of the president's nominations?
Absolutely it is. And I think that process should have been able to have been played out. And we've got a Ronny Jackson who was brought forward, and the nomination was brought forward, and he had served three other administrations, and then we had information that was brought out that basically had not been verified, had not been clarified, before we were able to go through a hearing process.
Given our format, I don't have a follow-up, so.
Yeah, again, yes, it is the legislative branch's job to jealously guard its power and to be a co-equal member of our government with not only the executive branch but with the judicial branch. It just seems that as we're watching, the executive branch and the judicial branch want our job, which is to create law. So in this situation, I think what should have happened is Tester should not have bullied Dr. Jackson. He should have waited for the process.
Mr. Fagg.
Well, and I agree. It's how it was done. We bring these people in. We put them under oath. We ask them tough questions. We allow them to answer. We do more cross-examination. This is how the process works. It's a due process situation. It's not impugning somebody's character. It's not prejudging them. It's not calling them pejorative names like Candyman. It's bringing them into the committee room and asking tough questions. That absolutely has to happen, but it needs to happen in the courtroom or the committee room and not in the press.
Mr. Dunning.
Unfortunately, I think this is what's become politics as usual. This is what happens when we start sending just bickering career politicians that start using unsubstantiated name-calling to bring somebody down, to create political change without anybody even, like I said before, standing up and being counted. You know, what does it say about us when we allow somebody to just make an accusation in the dark of night, say that you're a bad person, don't say who it is, and bring somebody down? That sounds like a Kafka novel.
Beth.
All right, Mr. Olszewski. You've raised the issue of the Flathead Tribal Water Compact during the campaign. Why do you believe this is an issue that should be addressed in the primary? What does it say about you or the other candidates?
Well, what happens is that we all say that we're fighting for property rights and water rights, and that's what we do as Republicans. And there is no clearer issue to make a stance on than the Salish Kootenai Water Compact. I mean, in a heartbeat, what has happened is that we've had a constitutional right, which is the water that belongs to the people for our common enjoyment. It's a common property right. And it's been given to a third party without remuneration, without giving it as charity, and without due process. And it was done in an unconstitutional way. The rules of the House were broken, and they were and it was pushed through the House in 2015 by the rules of jungle.
We're going to take a break there. The other candidates get an opportunity to respond to that question when we come back. Again, you're joining us here from the Ed Craney Studio at the Montana Historical Society Museum in Helena, as we listen to the candidates who would like to be your Republican representative candidate for the upcoming election. We'll continue our coverage in just a few minutes. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Ed Craney Studio here at the Montana Historical Society Museum in Helena. Tonight, the Greater Montana Foundation is presenting a discussion and a debate with the four candidates that would like to be your representative on the Republican Party for the United States Senate. And this evening, we're continuing our last question. We'll have Beth Sable readdress the question as we move along to Mr. Fagg.
All right, Mr. Fagg, the issue of the Flathead Tribal Water Compact has been brought up during the campaign. I just would love to hear your opinions on the issue in this primary and what you think it says about you or other candidates.
I support negotiated settlements when all the stakeholders are at the table. That is better than going to court. However, it's a non-issue because I'm not going to carry the bill and I'm not going to push the bill when I'm back in D.C. I know there's too much consternation across Montana about that. When I go across Montana, I want to talk about the issues and address the issues that Montanans are concerned about: economic prosperity, the immigration issue, the health care issue, jobs for their kids. Those are the issues that I'm going to take with me when I go back to D.C.
Mr. Downing.
You know, I didn't have a seat at the table during all these negotiations, and obviously this has been a really hot topic. And you know, I'm a problem solver, and I look at problems, and I look at what happens with the status quo and what we need to fix. And I look at the millions of dollars spent on litigation. That's not good for any of us. I look at all those problems and the thoughts of having continued litigation. And then on the other hand, I hear the questions about how it was negotiated, what the constitutional issues are, and I want to hear that. I need to have a place at the table. We need to discuss that. If it deviates from the Constitution, then I'm not willing to do that.
Mr. Rosendale.
I was the majority leader in the Montana Senate when this bill came through, and it was very contentious and did not have support across the spectrum, if you will. What we have there is a flawed document, and I think it needs more work. We had other water compacts come through that had nearly unanimous support from the legislature. It was very easily signed into law. It had nearly unanimous support across the communities that it was going to affect, and I think that we need to continue to work on this document so that we can achieve the same thing.
Mike?
Mr. Fagg, I'm wondering if you're concerned about the growing inequality of income in the United States, with the top 1% of the nation controlling more and more of the wealth in this country, while wages for the average person have been pretty stagnant. Do we just accept that, or is there steps that you would support to address that problem?
I am concerned about it, but I don't think government intervention is the answer. I think a incentive-based system is the answer. That's why I support limited government, individual responsibility, the rule of law, private property rights. Those are the things that are going to drive our economy. If we can get the economy up to 4 or 4.5%, all of a sudden that rises everybody's boats. Unfortunately, Mike, when government gets involved, it just doesn't work. We've seen the Great Society. To me, the Great Society has been a great failure. So it's not government's role to address that. If we grow the economy, it's going to help everybody, from the very lowest rings of society to the very top rings of society, and particularly the middle class, which, of course, we are all interested in.
So you don't think that policy set by the government in terms of economic policy has had any effect on what I've just described in the last 20 to 30 years?
You know, honestly, when you talk about the Great Society, I actually think it's had a negative effect. We've had we've developed this codependency on government, which I think has been very detrimental to our American psyche and the American esteem and the American dream. So I'm very concerned about some of the government policies of the last 20 or 30 years, which you just mentioned.
Mr. Downing.
You know, this is a great country, and we've all got equal opportunity. We may not all have equal results, but, you know, I built the American dream. I grew up in a poor family. I didn't have family money. I didn't have family connections. I had to do it myself. I put my head down. I took risk. I had some luck, and I built the American dream. And I want to see the government getting out of the way of my kids, our community's way. Allow us to thrive, to build that American dream. And like I said, we all have equal opportunity. We may not have equal results.
Mr. Rosendale.
I think the tax reform legislation is a perfect example of what government can do to spur the economy on. That is just to simply get out of the way. Not only did we have a reduction in taxes and we are seeing an incredible spur in growth in the economy, but also it gave businesses, small businesses, the ability to make a major purchase and expense it out in 1 year instead of depreciating it out over many years, and that is how you grow it. That, reducing regulations, that is how we will grow the economy.
Mr. Olszewski.
You know, I have been very concerned about inequality in wages as we go along. And the truth is that federal regulation has suppressed our wages. It's caused an acceleration of what we pay in health care. And as a result, that is a benefit that also pushes on our wages. You know, the Trump tax cuts have done something. It's gotten the government out of the way. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing that companies are bringing up their own minimum wage themselves, even up to $15 an hour. So this is the right way to do it. Government out of the way.
Mr. Downing, President Trump is being investigated for Russian interference in the 2016 election. He faces allegations of an affair with a porn star and has historically low job approval ratings. Will you continue to embrace the president during your campaign, or are you at all concerned that he might be viewed as a liability?
I want to be clear on one thing. You know, the president is a businessman. He's had private sector experience. He knows how to solve problems. So he can put teams together. And I think that's what we need. I think we need somebody that can stop doing business as usual, stop running government programs like government programs, start putting private sector accountability. So an America First agenda where we are trying to help businesses to thrive, to lessen our tax liability, to lessen the regulatory environment, allow us to build our American dreams, I think that's very positive. And then the other part is national security. If we're not secure, and as a combat veteran, again, I think about this a lot. If we're not secure, talk about a threat to the American dream. We need to make sure we have a strong military. And I'm glad to see that our president is concerned about securing our borders, about allowing our military to be equipped and to fight the good fight. So what I see is a president right now who is putting America first, is allowing businesses to thrive, which allows people to thrive and allows our kids to build their dreams.
So, Mr. Downing, a follow-up. Outside of negotiating skills and being a strong business leader, the president is consistently making headlines for various allegations. Is there anything that he has done over the past year and a half that you viewed as a liability?
What I see are the strengths of the president. I see a man in control. I see a businessman. I think we need to have more people that have business experience in government. In terms of how that affects us, it's very positive. Look at the president's policies and what they've done for this nation, and that's what I'm focused on. I'm looking at markets going up. I'm looking at unemployment going down. I'm looking at consumer confidence going up. I'm looking at illegal border crossings going down. I think that that's all good for America, and that's what I'm focused on with the president, what he's doing for America.
Mr. Rosendale.
You know, Beth, what you said was allegations, and that's what we continue to hear, allegations. And again, this gets back to due process and being able to prove something or not prove something. What the president is concerned about is expanding our economy, defending our nation, and preserving our culture. And those are things that he's working very hard on, and I support all of that. If we go into expanding our economy, we go into more tax reform, we go into more regulation. Instead of having an obstructionist like John Tester, you'll have Matt Rosendale.
Mr. Olszewski.
You know, let me be perfectly clear. Since I was born in 1962, there has never been a president that I could say is my moral compass. So let me repeat that. There's never been a president that has been, could be, or has been my moral compass. You know, President Trump is our president, and he is getting stuff done. He's been a man of action, and we've seen that he's done more than just cut regulations, more than create tax cuts. He's creating or getting us new judges. He's getting work done.
Mr. Fagg?
So I also like the tax reform package. I like the less regulation. Appointing Judge Gorsuch to the Supreme Court was absolute home run. In fact, I'd call it a grand slam. He'll be there for the next 30 to 35 years, God willing, applying the law, not making the law. My job is to do what's best for Montanans, and my strategy is jobs first, Montana always. I will stand up for Montanans first. That's why if I don't support one of the president's policies, such as the tariff, because it's bad for Montanans, I'll stand up to him. But I go back to support the president generally.
Mr. Rosendale, I know you're a very strong supporter of the Second Amendment and gun rights. I'm just wondering, are there any sort of reforms that have been talked about that you would support? And I use reform in kind of a loose term, in terms of like, you know, banning bump stocks or saying that certain people should not be allowed to own guns, if either by age or because of their mental health or because of their something in their background, or possibly background checks at universal background checks at gun shows as well. Any of those things that you support, are you just a big no on all that stuff? And if you are a big no, I'm just wondering if you have any concerns about what we're gonna do about gun violence in the country.
Mm-hmm. The big problem about gun violence in the country, Mike, I think we've seen two things that are a common thread in each and every one of these incidents, and that is it happens at a gun-free zone, and there's always mental health issues combined with it. What you'll see is the work that I've done in the auditor's office is to work on getting parity for mental health treatment on the same level as physical conditions. And I think that that is critically important to make sure that we address mental health issues. We have to get treatment early and often for people. And what we've seen in the past, especially in the most recent incident down in Florida, is law enforcement had 30 opportunities to stop that from happening, and they didn't do anything about it. It slipped through the cracks. We've got to take a more aggressive approach on mental health issues, and that's going to help us. As far as banning any type of weapon, if you ban a weapon, a certain type of manufacturer, you can change one little component and then continue to make it in a different form or fashion, and I really don't think that that would achieve anything.
Mr. Olszewski.
You know, a firearm is a tool, and it becomes a weapon when someone uses it for evil. Same is said with a baseball bat, a knife. You know, so what we have is we have to do issues or deal with the people that want to cause evil. And the truth is we have laws that will take your weapons away if you're a felon and if you have mental health issues. What we need to do is enforce our current laws.
Mr. Fagg?
I'm a strong believer in the Constitution. I'm a strong believer in the Second Amendment. Shall not be infringed is very clear. I'm supported by David Keene, former president of the NRA. As a judge, I know the problems go much deeper. It's a sociological problem. It's a mental health issue. Criminals do not pay attention to laws. I can't tell you the number of women that have come in for an order of protection and said, oh, now I'm safe. And I said, no, you're not. You still have to be very, very careful. And so this problem goes deeper than a Band-Aid approach of outlawing certain weapons. It's a sociological issue. It's a mental health issue.
Mr. Downing.
You know, my very first job as a teenager was working at a trap and skeet range. And, you know, I was a competitive shooter and an avid hunter. And I hear a lot of talk about the Second Amendment and trying to ban guns that you don't need for hunting or shooting targets. But that's not what it's about. Second Amendment is about standing up to tyranny. And I am a strong supporter of that. The other part of that is if we start deviating from that, we're deviating from the Constitution. The farther we get away from the Constitution, the more problems we create. We're not solving anything. And just to be really clear, I'm not going to Washington for more regulations. I'm going to cut them.
All right, Mr. Olszewski. You and all of you up there have talked about the high cost of prescription drugs. So pretty simple, what do you do about it?
Well, first of all, we have to take away the favored status of pharmaceutical companies. I mean, they were the first at the table when Obamacare was created. And they said, if we can be at the table, we'll help you get through it. We don't want to be on the table. And as a result of the way the regulations in Obamacare have been placed, what we've seen is that pharmaceutical companies have been able to raise their rates on generic drugs, you know, anywhere between 10 and 20% a year. And that's unconscionable. We have to be able to stop that. So one of the first things that we have to do is take away that favored status. We have to make sure that the regulations are such that it allows brand name drugs to become generic, because we're seeing a lot of hurdles that protect drugs. We also have to make sure that we are not the people that finance research and development for the world. You know, if it's $50 for a tablet of medicine here in the United States, it should be no different anywhere else.
Mr. Fay?
To follow up on what Al said, you know, I believe in competition. I believe in market systems. We need to let those systems work. The pharmaceutical lobby is the biggest lobby in the United States. If you looked at how much money John Tester has received from the pharmaceutical lobby, it would shock you. And that's the problem. They are beholden to lobbyists. So we need to allow competition to work. We need to allow market systems to work. And those prices will start to come down, to tag along on what Al said.
Mr. Downey.
I was a research scientist, and one of the projects we had was doing research for Merck, one of the pharmaceutical companies, and we were doing interfaces for molecular modeling. But the part that was interesting about is how much money went into that and how much work we had to do to actually do that and how much they had to protect. Right now, it's tremendously expensive, but the United States of America is paying for research and development for the rest of the world. Why are we not demanding most favored nation status? Why are we not demanding the rest of the world to pick up that part of the tab?
Mr. Rosendale.
If you would see a schematic of where a pill travels from the time it is manufactured until it goes into your mouth, it looks like the back of a laptop computer. It's amazing, and there's money that is attached every step along the way. You've got pharmacy benefit managers that are receiving the benefit of rebates that manufacturers are putting out there, and the consumer's not receiving that benefit. We're doing a study right now. We must get transparency into this system.
Mike?
Mr. Fagg, we talked last time about income inequality. I have a related question. I'm wondering, what do you think is an acceptable minimum wage for the country?
I think the current minimum wage is acceptable. I think it works.
$7.25.
I believe that's what it is, and yes, I think that's right. You know, at the end of the day, Mike, you can raise the minimum wage, but you're just going to take jobs away from hardworking people. My wife's family has a restaurant in Anaconda. Many of you have heard of it. It's called Barkley 2. It's a family restaurant. It's absolutely some of the best food that you can get in Montana. But they're having a hard time making it, and they're paying the minimum wage. And then if you increase their minimum wage on those servers, on the cooks, on the dishwasher, then all you're going to do is say to Sandy, who runs the operation, I can't hire as many people. And so you're actually taking away jobs from those people that you are trying to help. So, no, at this point, we have a system to increase the minimum wage. I would not favor jumping it to, you know, some people say $15 an hour. That's actually going to hurt those that it's intended to help.
Mr. Downing.
You know, as a businessman, I think about those costs, and as somebody who's had a prior career in technology, I think of what the consequences are going to be. And I think that when we start meddling with minimum wages, we're going to have unintended consequences, and we're going to start seeing jobs being lost to technology. We see that happen right now in traditional jobs where kids are working, you know, their first job out of school that are now kiosks. So what's next? I think the more we play with that, the more problems we create, and I think we need to leave it alone.
Mr. Rosendale.
When the Bakken oil boom was taking place over in eastern Montana and western North Dakota, the minimum wage in Sidney, Montana was $17.50 an hour, and you had people that were walking away from the jobs because they could go on the oil patch and make $125,000 a year. The beautiful thing about that is it wasn't set by the state or the city or the federal government. What we do have is it has now returned to a normal wage because the oil boom has slowed down. Let the market work.
Mr. Olszewski.
The appropriate wage is the one that the employer is willing to pay and the employee is willing to take and work it out through that negotiation. We're watching it right now in the Flathead Valley. The fact is that minimum wage is much higher than what the government says it's supposed to be. And the reason is because we have a great economic growth situation. We have demand for high quality and even just good workers with high, you know, with good work ethic. And so let the free market decide, and I think that we'll find it'll be best.
Mr. Downing, Many parts of the nation's infrastructure are in disrepair, from roads to telecommunications to schools. Should we have government investment to reverse this trend, and if so, how do we pay for it?
Yes, we need to invest in our infrastructure. And one of the businesses that I've been involved in is we had a commercial real estate business where we bought cash flow real estate across the country. And deferred maintenance is always an issue. If you don't start taking care of that, your expenses get worse and worse and worse until they're almost insurmountable. And so we need to invest in our infrastructure. And one of the things that we see in Montana, and especially rural America, is not just bridges and roads. We need to invest in infrastructure to allow them to, you know, join the modern era. We need to start investing in broadband access. We need to make sure that they can compete. And even in the ag world, as you see ag tech just growing exponentially, being connected is important if you're going to continue competing with other people. So yes, we need to invest in infrastructure. We need to find a way to pay for that. And we need to make sure that we continue to allow all of our citizens, from rural to urban parts of this state, to compete with the rest of the world.
I think you hit it on the head. We need to find a way to pay for it. How would you suggest doing that?
One of the problems that we have right now is, I've mentioned this before, we've got spending problems. We need to find ways that we can invest in our infrastructure that create jobs, that then create higher economy, so that we have people that are investing, building this infrastructure, adding to the economy, so that we start to increase revenues in the country. It's not an easy question, but it needs to be a serious conversation on how this is going to affect the economy, who's going to be doing the development of that infrastructure, and we need to find a way to pay for that and continue creating jobs.
Mr. Rosendale.
I've developed a lot of property over the years, and as a developer, I can tell you, when I go in, I just want to make sure that I've got the main systems in place, and then I am more than willing to provide the infrastructure for my own projects. I've run water lines. I've run sewer lines. I've built water towers before. Where we're missing the boat is the Transportation Trust Fund, where there are dollars being squandered all over the nation on projects that are not related directly to our highway system and our bridges. We need to refocus those dollars and then see if there are other funds that are available.
Mr. Olszewski.
Yes, infrastructure is something that the government should be good at doing. Roads, bridges, sewer systems, water projects. These are things that we should have, and the government should be the one that's leading the way. Paying for it, yes, that is a hard time. You know, even just in Montana, if we take the gas tax we currently have, if we were to redirect all that money for gas tax specifically only for road infrastructure, we could pay for it. But the fact is our gas tax pays for far much more than just our infrastructure.
Mr. Fagg.
So Alex de Tocqueville said in Democracy in America that every democracy eventually fails because people get elected by taking money out of the public treasury to continue to get reelected. And that's exactly what the last three speakers have said. Yes, we should have infrastructure. I can say that too. The question is, how do you pay for it? The way you pay for it is to grow the economy. Under President Obama, we had a 1.5 to 2% growth. Under President Trump, we're up to 3 and 3.5% growth. If we can get to 4 to 4.5% growth, all of a sudden there is revenue to pay for it.
Thank you, Mr. Fagg. Final question.
Mr. Rosendale, I know you're a strong supporter of the GOP tax cut bill that passed last December, as is everybody here on the stage. I'm just wondering, how and when specifically are we going to know that it's working and will continue to work? And I'm wondering, what spending must we cut to avoid running up even larger deficits?
Well, first of all, the GDP is growing at a faster rate, and I think that that's a demonstration that it is actually working, and it's my understanding that they have estimated that we're going to generate record amounts of revenue at $3.4 trillion. That's my understanding. So if that is the case, then clearly that's going to work. Again, not only do we have reductions in the rate of taxation, but we've also accelerated the ability for people to take those expenses so they can make a major purchase and they can expense that out in 1 year instead of depreciating it out. That's also going to drive the manufacturing. So that is a big thing. Where you can cut? Everywhere, Mike. There's absolutely no department or agency that cannot withstand that cannot withstand reductions in spending. The Veterans Administration and the military and defense can redirect funds. There's a lot of funds that are being misused. We see buildings that are being constructed, and we're not staffing them properly, although John Tester would like to say he's done a tremendous job.
Mr. Olszewski.
I guess the easiest way to say that is that, we'll know by watching what our gross domestic product goes up, but really our gross national product is the one that's going to be really the most important one to watch. We're going to watch what the revenues do here. You know, it's estimated that in Montana we'll get $750 million a year back into the pockets of Montanans, and we'll see a net bump in our general fund by $5 million a year. So that's good for Montana.
Mr. Fagg?
I was an economics major in college, and I believe that the tax cuts will pay for themselves, and they will actually garner more money than they cost over the 10 years because of the growing economy. I absolutely believe that will happen. We talked about spending. I said it. I'll say it again. We need to cap spending. I think if we do that, the 2019 budget at 18 levels, then we are going to have a balanced budget in about three and a half years. George Will said, when you're in a hole, the first thing you do is stop digging, and that's what we need to do as a country.
Mr. Downing.
John Tester voted against that tax bill, those tax cuts. You know, we're all better at spending our own money than the government. I think that's been proved in all things government. Like I've said before, the problem with government programs, they're all run like government programs. I'm happy we have a win. I think that'll stimulate the economy. I think that we'll all be better for that. But what I think about that's still missing is the complexity in the code. We have not done anything about that complexity of the code. When you've got a small business operator that is paying somebody else to figure out what they have to do, filing all their papers, how to plan before you've even paid the first dollar in taxes, that's
Thank
a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Downing. That concludes the question portion of our debate tonight. Now we ask each candidate to take 60 seconds and tell Montanans why they should vote for you. We'll start with Mr. Olszewski.
Well, thank you. I mean, if you take the strengths of all the candidates on the stage and wrap them into one, that's me. I'm a successful small businessman. I'm a battle-tested state legislator. I'm an Air Force veteran that understands the issues of the Veterans Administration and the harm that it's done to our veterans here. But also for icing on the cake, you know, like everybody here, I love Montana. And I want the best not only for Montana, but also for my children and your children. So, yeah, I've learned to serve. And I am the dark horse candidate that's become the Cinderella story candidate. The only Made in Montana poll that's been put out by the Montana Mint, I was one picked with 53% by the people of Montana. And why? It's because I'm one with a message. And it's a positive message. And I'm going to fight for Montana, and I'm going to take our conscience and take it to Washington, and we'll fix it. Thank you.
Mr. Fagg.
The reason I'm running for this office is because I love our country and I love my children. And I'm afraid my children are not going to have the opportunity for the American dream that we've had. I'm a fourth-generation Montanan. I'm a district court judge for 22 years. I served as a Republican in the legislature prior to that. I've got the Montana endorsements. I've got the Montana roots, and I've got the Montana support. As I've mentioned, over 1,000 Montanans have supported me in this race. I've received more Montana contributions than all of my primary opponents combined. That's what it's going to take to defeat Senator Tester. The issue that every Republican has to ask is who can defeat Senator Tester. As Mark Roscoe said when I asked him for his endorsement, he said, Russ, I was the RNC chair. I don't get involved in primaries. But I'm going to endorse you because I believe you will make an excellent senator, and you're the only one who can defeat John Tester. That's the question that Montanans have to ask. Who can defeat John Tester? Who will take the issues to him in a factual and respectful way?
Thank you, Mr. Fagg.
And it will be myself.
Mr. Downing.
Yeah, I'm very different than anybody else up here. And I've built the American dream. I'm proud of that. And I have proven that I will put my life on the line to fight to protect that. Now, I want to just look at the beginning. I built that American dream. I'm the only one that has created jobs in multiple industries nationwide. I've been at the leading edge of technology. I was with Yahoo from a company that I started myself. I built a nationwide insurance company, a nationwide commercial real estate company. I have a manufacturing company that does export, that we export around the world. So I've got that experience. I've got the business experience in a very broad base. I'm the only one here that's had a securities license. Not even our commissioner of securities has a securities license. But the other part of that is I've proven that I will fight for this nation. You know, people ask me when I first walked into a recruiter's office and I said after September 11th, you know, I've got a pilot's license. I used to teach. What can you do with me? You know, I signed at the dotted line. I went into a combat search and rescue squadron. We don't have a single person representing Montana that's been in a combat zone or a person running other than me.
Mr. Rosendale.
This November, the people of Montana are going to elect someone to the United States Senate that has a flat top. The only question is it going to be John Tester or Matt Rosendale? If it's John Tester, then you're going to have someone who supports Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. If it's Matt Rosendale, you're going to have someone who supports the people of Montana. And if that's the case, then no more will we have good deals for bad countries. And no more will we have tax reform voted against while he votes for himself to have bonuses for his offices. And no more will we have someone who puts the interest of illegal immigrants before the interest of Montana children and our nation's military. And no more will it be Obamacare for us and special care for him and no care for our veterans. I thank you for your continued support, and I'd appreciate your vote in June.
On behalf of the Greater Montana Foundation Board of Trustees, I want to thank each of you candidates. You did a great job tonight. I want to thank Mike and Beth. Ron, thank you for moderating. We appreciate our live stream and our broadcast audiences tonight and those in the studio here at the Montana Historical Society. We also appreciate those who helped make this program possible, the staff of the Historical Society and Studio 19 Productions. We hope that you have found this program to be informative. We hope that you'll join us for the Democratic congressional primary candidates in a week.